once again to our program, The Universal Call to Holiness and Wholeness, trying to follow in the footsteps of Jesus, who is the way, the truth, and the life. Our guest, again, is Ron Eldred, who is professor of religion and world history at John Paul II Catholic High. And I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, a pastor emeritus at St. Patrick's Catholic Church at 19th and Poplar. Ron, welcome once again. We've been talking about the Sermon on the Mount, the eight Beatitudes, or the eight ways that Jesus told us that we could build on the Ten Commandments and even take the Ten Commandments farther. Ten Commandments don't say anything about forgiving our enemies, and Jesus said a lot about forgiving our enemies, doing good to those who do evil to us. So we, you read that beautiful section from Matthew 25 about the judgment, shepherd separating the sheep from the goats, right hand, left hand, some go into eternal happiness, so on, some go into the eternal separation from God in hell. And it was because I was hungry and you gave me to eat, thirsty and you gave me to drink. So I think we were up to the corporal of the bodily work of mercy, about visit the imprisoned.
Yeah, so far we've looked at to feed the hungry, to give drink to the thirsty, and to clothe the naked. Now we're ready to look at to visit the imprisoned. And this is from, Matthew. I was in prison and you came to me or visited me, Matthew 25:36. And those who visit the prisoners in jails and give them instruction and material help or doing a work of mercy. In the Middle Ages, the Order of Ransom was founded for the ransom of Christians that were held captive by the Turks. And it's said that more than 1 million Christians were thus ransomed, either with money or by others taking their place or some other such practice. A famous French cardinal in the 19th century established the Order of the White Fathers, aimed at freeing slaves in Africa. Now, it isn't practical to visit the imprisoned, if it isn't. Sometimes it isn't practical. And we'll come back to that in just a minute. But, you could write them, be a pen pal or something like that. I believe our director of our radio station here has a pen pal, if I recall right, and I think that's a great thing to do.
And told us of all the practical difficulties in trying to get a Bible sent
yes.
to him.
Well, I know a bus driver here at St. Patrick's. He has a ministry in his church where he goes on Sundays to the jail here, local jail, and preaches and counsels and things of that sort. And certainly that's a wonderful ministry on his part. St. Teresa of Lisieux, Thérèse of Lisieux, although she never visited anybody, but she used to pray a lot. That's a spiritual work of mercy, but nonetheless, she used to pray for prisoners, and she even brought about the conversion of some notorious prisoners by her prayers.
In an autobiography, which is very interesting and fascinating still to read, she talks about praying for a famous prisoner named Promzini, who was a murderer, I think, in the Rue de Bac. And he killed perhaps two women at least, and he was condemned to death. And then she pleaded with the Lord to give me my first person condemned to death. And she opened the newspaper, LaCroix, the next day, and it said Pranzini goes to death, unrepentant. The story goes on, as he was mounting the stair steps, then he turned and he took the crucifix from the priest who was standing there, and he kissed the crucifix, and Teresa then knew that he had really repented interiorly. So a work of great concern for a condemned prisoner.
Well, I mentioned a while ago, it's not practical a lot of times to visit prisoners unless you have a relative or a friend. In other words, if you show up at the Terre Haute jail want to go visit the prisoners. They're not going to let you in unless you're...
for obvious reasons.
Yes, certainly. You have to have security. Or if you went out to the federal penitentiary, I think I'll go in there and visit her on a Sunday afternoon, and visit with the prisoners. They're not going to let you in. But unless you know somebody, unless they're a relative or a friend or something like that. And then you have to do that according, to very strict rules. And as you said, the reasons, of course, are obvious.
Well, I know our music minister here at St. Patrick's frequently goes up to the Rockville prison puts on a religious session for, well, she's a wonderful guitarist and singer. And I think Father Joe Kern perhaps even still goes with her frequently to visit. What they're doing is visit the imprisoned, because Jesus said, I was in prison and you visited me.
But if you can't actually visit, you could pray for them. You could be a pen pal. You could contribute to their library. Or it's not real easy to send people books or whatever, or magazines, as our director of our radio station has found out. I think they'll only accept books if they come directly from the publisher, things of that sort. But again, that's for security reasons.
Again, security reasons, yes. Sure. Okay. Well, the next is to shelter the homeless, the corporal work of mercy. How would that happen practically today?
I was a stranger and you took me in, Matthew 25:35. And those who do this work of mercy are like the Good Samaritan. They provide clean, those who provide clean and comfortable homes for the poor at low rates of rent practice, I think, the work of mercy. St. Paul said, hospitality, do not forget, for by this some, not being aware of it, have entertained angels. He says this in Hebrews 13:2. In olden times, travelers stopped for the night or for food in the monasteries. In the Alps, the monks of St. Bernard performed this work of mercy when they rescued people with the aid of their famous breed of dogs.
Those great St. Bernard dogs that can apparently get through the snow when nobody else can.
Yes. Providing alms, I think, to the Lighthouse Mission or to the Salvation Army or
Catholic charities
or any such sort, other type of thing, to shelter the homeless.
Simeon House, right next door to us.
Yes.
Sheltering the homeless. Bethany House.
And particularly, victims of, let's say, of the hurricane or the great tsunami that hit last year. These are certainly examples of helping to shelter the homeless. There are a lot of people after Katrina, that were taken in by people around the country, to help provide shelter for them during their time of trial.
Two great tragedies that almost everybody knows about through the intense coverage of television.
But I think those who contribute their time to building homes for Habitat for Humanity, I think they're helping to shelter the homeless.
Well, that was one of the really impressive organizations that reach out around the world.
Sure.
And they have people who need homes, and they tell them or teach them how to help build a home with an awful lot of help.
Mm-hmm.
They have to contribute their own labor and time and effort. I just think it's a wonderful organization, Habitat for Humanity. Well, another corporal work of mercy that is so common, to visit the sick, are so needed.
I was sick and you cared for me, Matthew 25:36. When we visit the sick in order to give them temporal or spiritual relief, we do an act of mercy. To build, support, or a hospital, or patronage for the sick is a most, I think, meritorious act of charity. One of the persons that comes to mind more than anybody I can think of is Mother Francesca Gabrini. She was sent by Pope Leo XIII to the United States to work among primarily the poor Italians who'd been coming.
Immigrants
who'd been coming to this country in very large numbers in the 1880s and 90s and the first couple of decades of the 20th century. And so many of them were just unchurched. They were getting away from the church, and many of them were, most of them were poor and what have you. And her main act of charity was building hospitals. Miraculous. She'd go, for example, I remember one story when she went to Seattle, and she got off the train and went down to one of the local convents. Another group of nuns took her in so she could stay there with the nun that was with her, traveling with her. And her technique was to look in the phone book, maybe for a particular address, or she'd just start walking. And in Seattle, I remember, she just started walking.
Seattle?
Yeah.
Washington?
Yeah, yes. Okay. And she'd walk and walk and walk. She walked all day, come back the next day, walk all day, until she found the building she wanted. When she found the building she wanted, she'd find out who owned it and talk them into giving it to her.
Is that right?
And then she would go find people to give money to build, to get beds and put operating rooms in. And then she'd see about getting a staff. She did all this with absolutely no money.
Amazing.
And she would name all these hospitals Columbus Hospital. There's one in Chicago. I think there's one in New Orleans. There's a number of these Columbus hospitals around the country that she helped establish. And the reason she chose Columbus, of course, was he was an Italian, from Genoa, and she wanted to create pride amongst the poor Italian people in this country.
I think she died at the Columbus Hospital that she had founded in Chicago.
Yeah, and I think she was buried, moved there to just on the George Washington Bridge on the New York's Manhattan side. There's a Catholic girls' school there, because she also started a lot of schools and hospices and,
orphanages
and things like that. And I believe she's buried in this Catholic Mother Cabrini High School, I think, just right almost on the Hudson River there, inside of Manhattan.
She had a lot to do with caring for the sick, particularly her hospitals.
Yes.
We might add that she was the first canonized American saint, although she wasn't native born, born in Italy, but she became a naturalized citizen.
In fact, that's where she was naturalized, was in Seattle.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there have been a few other famous people, like the daughter of Nathaniel Hawthorne. About Rose Hawthorne, who was the daughter of our famous American author, Nathaniel Hawthorne.
Well, she was a convert to the church, and she started the Hawthorne Dominicans. And they built hospitals. I don't know how many hospitals they have around the country, but they're cancer hospitals. And I think there's one in Chicago, I believe. I think there's at least a half a dozen of these Hawthorne Sisters Catholic hospitals around in the country. I think, doctors and nurses who perform their duties to please God and to benefit their neighbor, I think that's definitely, a work of mercy and will certainly be rewarded in heaven. And there are several religious orders, Catholic religious orders, have been founded for the express purpose of taking care of the sick, such as the St. John of God, the St. Vincent de Paul, and some other religious orders.
So visiting the sick could go from anything as to founding a hospital wing, visiting once a week some sick neighbor or shut-in neighbor.
Sure. Or a nursing home.
Nursing homes.
We have a ministry from our parish here, and we have a lady assigned full-time. And I have a daughter that helps her at times, a volunteer helper. And they go to the hospital or the shut-ins or whatever,
And do a wonderful job.
Yes, they certainly do.
Sometimes I just heard from the Legion of Mary meeting that they were visiting a lady in one of the nursing homes who had 8 children. And she said, "None of my children ever come to visit." And that's in town here.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be a real work of mercy and concern that people can easily get abandoned and forgotten after all they've done for other people. So I were sick and you visited me. When Jesus says that, something inspiring that can keep us all focused in the right direction. I also wanted to say about St. Jude Hospital, set up by Danny Thomas, which is that wonderful hospital. I believe it's free, isn't it?
For the most part, I think it is. Yes. And, in fact, we know some people who are about to take their one of their children down there that has cancer.
And I forgot exactly how he started that. He made a promise, something, mm-hmm. about an important thing.
I believe it was that he would be successful in his career.
Okay.
As a comedian and an mm-hmm. actor, I believe, if I recall.
Yeah, I know it was a real bargain he made with the Almighty, and he certainly stuck to his part of the bargain.
I have a stepbrother who had quite a bit of connection to that hospital. He was, after he was in World War II, when he got home, he went to ISU, became an art major, and then he started selling ceramics and he saw a real good opportunity when St. Jude Hospital was being built. So he moved to Memphis and started selling ceramic by the carloads, and a lot of that ceramic in that hospital he sold to them. In fact, he settled in the Memphis area and lived the rest of his life.
See, that's fascinating to know.
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of a little anecdotal thing. But
sure. Well, again, I think when we say visit the sick, that has all kinds of opportunities today, particularly in our society that has a real concern for health trying to, you know, the diocese even fosters for priests a wellness program. Their theory is if you can keep people well, then you've got people who can, more people to take care of the sick. And because if I'm sick, I can't take care of anybody but myself. So sickness and health are realities every one of us deal with in our families every day. Well, why don't we go on to bury the dead? The last corporal work of mercy. What does it mean to bury the dead? How practically can we do that?
Well, to attend a funeral of someone, not necessarily just your family or friends or neighbors, but I know people here in Terre Haute who purposely go to funerals that they don't even know the people for the mass, so that they can have somebody there.
Really,
or visit a funeral home. It doesn't always have to be somebody you know, but. Or anybody that's in mourning, a bereaved family, what you could do to try to comfort them.
One of the things the parish does, I think, is so nice. The women of the parish do that. They have a meal
uh-huh.
after the funeral for all the family, so the family can have some time together.
And I believe just about all Protestant churches do
that, too.
Churches
probably do something like that.
Yes.
It's a great help to people at a time when they're really under pressure, having lost a loved one. Okay, well, so we're kind of coming back to that the most ordinary thing, giving a glass of water, feeding the hungry, visiting the sick, visiting the funeral home, things that are part of our ordinary life can be ways of really serving God, because Jesus said, I was sick or I was homeless or I was hungry and you took care of me. So it's our faith gives us new eyes to see people in a new way and to see situations in a new way.
Well, one of the reasons God allows all of these things to happen, these unfortunate things, so we can practice virtue and good works. There are other reasons why there's evil in the world, and I don't want to get into that topic right now, but certainly that's one of the main reasons.
Well, you know, Mother Teresa always said that, she said, now we're not really social workers. We are doing this because of the Gospel of Matthew. We see Jesus in the poorest of the poor, and if anyone, group of sisters ever put that into practice, the Missionary Sisters of Charity, founded by Mother Teresa of Calcutta, India, certainly are exemplary lights in the darkness.
Well, I believe it was Malcolm Muggeridge. I asked her one time, how can you possibly deal with all the terrible things you have to deal with? I don't want to get into description of that, but some of the things that he describes are rather poignant. And she said, well, I see Jesus in all of these people.
And, you know, it's such a simple statement, but she really meant it. I mean, she was, in my opinion, a towering spiritual figure of our century, just like John Paul II was a towering spiritual figure of our century. Okay, well, we've talked about the seven bodily, or the seven corporal works of mercy that are based on the 25th chapter of St. Matthew. Let's take a look at something just as important, the spiritual works of mercy, how we can help a person not just bodily, but with their emotional, spiritual needs, which can be deeper sometimes than even physical hunger.
Well, the Catechism tells us that the spiritual works of mercy are, quote, charitable actions by which we come to the aid of our neighbor in spiritual necessities, end of quote. In other words, there are actions that help our neighbors achieve heaven.
Okay. Now, I think the problem with the spiritual works of mercy is that sometimes they're a lot harder to do than the bodily works of mercy, feed the hungry, clothe the naked, and visit the sick, because we can be accused of interference or mind your own business, or as you stay out of this. So as we talk about this, we'll see why that's true. First, spiritual work of mercy of the seven is to admonish the sinner.
Well, that's the easiest way to get into trouble.
Right.
Well, it says in the Bible that there will be more joy in heaven at the repentance of one sinner than at 99 of the righteous who had no need of repentance. We find that in Luke 15:7. And whenever we think of our words may have a good effect, we should not hesitate to admonish to correct somebody prudently, you know.
Now, there's the key word, I guess, prudently.
Yes.
When to say something, when not to say something.
Of course, that's a virtue, as we learned earlier when we talked about the virtues.
And we almost have to pray for guidance. Parents have that problem all the time.
Sure.
I talked to a woman just today who makes a Monica hour, plus her regular hour at over at the Perpetual Adoration Chapel next to St. Patrick's Rectory here behind Simeon House. And I said, what is the Monica hour? She said, well, I have three children, all of whom are out of the church. And so, like St. Monica, I spend 1 hour a week praying just particularly for my three children to come back to church. She said, I can't really talk to them anymore. They always say I'm preaching to them. So I've gone into the deeper level, even spending an hour a week to pray and ask God's grace for them. So she certainly admonishing the sinner in the best way that she knows how, because she can't really say much anymore.
I think another thing covered under that spiritual work of mercy, for example, those in authority, you know, parents, teachers, employers, or whatever, they're bound to admonish or to correct or reprove somebody when they're, you know, when they're wrong, and try to correct their faults, even if doing so brings trouble upon oneself.
And it often will, and it often does. I think that's why it's so hard to practice admonish the sinner. And I think we can learn from our experience and other people's experience when to speak and when not to speak.
I think another good way is simply to be a good example yourself, setting a good example for people. In admonishing sinners, though, we must do so with gentleness, with charity, with prudence. Otherwise, we might only produce results the opposite of what we wish. In fact, psychologists, I believe, if I recall, I call this a reaction formation. If you get exactly the the opposite result that you intend. So you have to do it carefully.
Have to do it with love.
Yes, you have
and,
to.
And I remember I went to talk to a parishioner one time because he had a really bad drinking problem. And he had helped me quite a bit when I'd first come into the parish. So I went and told him to make up a name and said, John, you helped me a lot when I came into the parish and hard to get my roots down and the like. So I'm coming to you, and you may not talk to me anymore. You probably won't like what I'm saying. But I think, John, you have to do something about your drinking problem. And you know that we Irish aren't particularly noted for being able to handle alcohol well. So I just want to let you know that I'm really concerned about you. And, well, he was okay, but he didn't really stop drinking. But I, fortunately, later on, he had lost his job and he lost his family and the like, but he got into AA finally, and he became a counselor for AA. So even when we may plant a seed, when we, I like to call it care fronting, it's not just confronting, but it's confronting a person with care and with love. And most people know if we do it out of genuine love, we're not bawling them out and tell them how bad they are. We're trying to, in a way, reach out to them. There's that beautiful quote from St. James you might want to put in there, Ron.
Yes, he who causes a sinner to be brought back from his misguided way will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. This is found in James 5:20.
I think only a loving person can really admonish the sinner. John the Baptist did it in his way, thunder and lightning. Jesus did it in different ways. To the woman taken in adultery, has no one condemned you? Let him who was out sin throw the first stone. Neither will I condemn you. So I think we can admonish the sinner, but it always has to be done with love. And sometimes we have to take a little flack just because we are concerned about the person.
Well, I think it would be wrong of us if we, if just with just a little bit of trouble, we could save somebody or help somebody turn their life around or straighten up. But on the other hand, if we didn't, this would be, I think, a very serious mistake on our part.
Oh, it's a kind of abandoning a person who's in quicksand.
And not only that, we obtain for ourselves a lot of graces for ourselves when we do these good deeds.
Undoubtedly, as well as, I think, like the saying of St. James, save a person from death and cover a multitude of sins. I think all of us have some sins we need to cover. It's really sort of making restitution to help somebody else. So, and many people helped us. I'm sure teachers and parents and friends have said something to most of us in time of need when we needed to be kind of warned or corrected. Are told that, I always like that saying somebody said, do you know if you keep going in the direction you're going around the bend, the bridge is out. You're headed for destruction. And I think that's what we're trying to do if we're really trying to help a person. Well, we've covered some of the difficult admonish the sinner, and that may be the toughest one of all. I think our time is running out on us, so we'll take the other spiritual works of mercy in our next round. So great thanks to our listeners, and may God bless you always and in all ways.